This week on RSBNB Update, Zamorak's first patch has fixed key issues, but in the meantime, we talk about the aftermath of Aftermath. Is the Sixth Age over? We also dive into the Protean and Dummy processors and ask, is it time to amp the lapse? This is RSBNB Update, episode 891, recorded Thursday, July 14th, 2022. Toodles! Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We're back for our week two coverage of Zamorak in Undercity, Zamorak himself, amongst other things. Unfortunately, folks, Tanis is not here this week. He became very ill last night, and he's recovering today, so we wish him all the best. But joining us today to deliver this podcast is Earth and Questcaping. Welcome aboard to the both of you.
Hey,
are we on a boat?
Welcome aboard? Yeah, we're on the SS RSBNB Update.
Oh no!
Delivering podcasts week by week, covering the RuneScape news of the week, whether it be the game update, patch notes, microtransaction updates, which we actually do have this week. Lots of lore discussions, and of course, sometimes some interesting discussions going back on updates as well, but nonetheless, thank you for joining us here on RSBNB Update. If you want full show notes, you can find those at update.show. You can also find us in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. I am Shane12088 in-game. Earth can be found at Lord Earth and Questcaping. You're Questcaping right now, right?
I am indeed.
Okay, of course. Good. Always nice when people's names match up with what we call them on air. But nonetheless, I realize after last week's podcast that was a lot of PVM and combat last week. But we just have to say that in terms of what we covered, in terms of rewards and drops and mechanics and such. And I really enjoyed the boss myself. I know Earth took a run with us. What did you think of the run when you went?
It was interesting.
Yeah, would you do it again solo?
I plan to.
Okay, you're gonna try and beat my 27-minute and 44-second time.
No, I hope that record remains forever because it is. Peak you surviving far longer than you should have with no right.
I think you deserve that honor.
Having
Shane.
No idea, he is now the leader by 4 minutes 13 seconds.
Yeah,
I'm proud of you.
And that's on the high scores for anyone to see. And that I'm just holding that for as long as I can. I want to see if anybody has a longer time than that, and then I will resume trying to go for solo kills after that. But that's just too funny to try and make
literally
a move.
Literally in last place.
Yeah, yeah. I got a message on RS asking if it was intentional this week from someone. Who saw it on the high score?
And I said, "Not.
No, it wasn't.
You were trying as hard as you could."
Yeah, but Questcaping, how did you feel about the dungeon?
Well, I story mooded it. Funny story, I did it day one with a whole group of fairly PVM noob types.
Right.
I'm mid-tier PVM myself, but brought some people along, and we could not do it on story mode thanks to a lovely little bug where story mode was meant to be 90% less damage. Instead, it was 90% of the damage, so basically the same. We made a few stabs at it and could not even make it past a couple of phases.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was us retiring for the day.
I think it was.
It
fixed.
Got fixed minutes after we stopped.
Which.
So, yeah, first
was...
day.
Okay, so by the time I got around to it that evening, probably had been fixed.
Mm hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I saw that and was like, I must have fixed that quick, or I'm better than I think I am.
In any case, for people wanting to try, Free Death Week has been extended to July 18th, and they modified it so that familiars will be kept now rather than being lost upon death. So there's that, too. You'll just respawn in death's office, which I think is the better way to go about it. Because, you know, obviously when you die, you lose the familiar, but you also, with that, have to pick up anything that was in it if it was a beast of burden. So just added an extra little wrinkle that needed to be fixed, reclaimed upon reappearing in Death's office. So, nonetheless, we're going to start off with some of the patch notes for Zamorak this week, because that's effectively where we left off. Then we're going to move into the lore discussion of Aftermath. So Aftermath, as we're calling it. So starting off, mobs inside the Zamorakian Undercity have had their health pools adjusted, and several will now start with a lower base HP, but scale slightly harder. This will mean fewer HP hit points need to be dealt with at all enrages, with normal mode actually being the most affected, interestingly enough. And what we noticed when we were in there is that most of the heavier, chunky NPCs did appear to scale linearly with the number of people that were in the dungeon. And I don't know if this is going to have any impact on story or not.
Oh, it definitely had an impact on story mode. I mean, I did have a difference between my first attempt was with four people story mode. My successful attempt was just solo story mode. But yeah, it felt like so much more of a slog on release day than it did solo, just playing by myself a week later with the patch notes in effect.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it felt like night and day. Like, it took several minutes on some of the mini-bosses with four people on them, and that feels a bit odd for story mode, honestly.
Right. And the interesting part about that is there's actually... there was a patch note for HP scaling for just in rage mode, so I guess this is definitely something as well for story mode that you were feeling... As well, I thought maybe that other patch note might have, or the hot fix might have been for all, but it was looks to be have been just in rage. So, All right. They also slightly changed the number of mobs on some of the dungeon gates, in particular, reducing the number of demons that were needed to be killed at lower in rages.
Yeah, I was surprised that some of the little gates were opening earlier than expected.
Right.
Like, oh, okay, could just sail right through.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like that's what needs to be done, and it keeps it in line with the previous EDs that have been released, so it's fine. Mm. And they also addressed a safe spot in the fight with Eterna, the ritual leader, that kept the player safe from her spiked floor traps, which we might have been using inadvertently when we did our kills.
You dead-ass told me, hey, stand here.
Well, yeah, I mean...
What do you mean, inadvertently?
Well, I thought maybe they weren't supposed to go in that area.
RSBNB bug abuse?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
You're gonna get me banned for bug abuse, Shane. This is your fault.
I mean, it's minor, of all things. It's not like we,
Slippery
you know...
slope.
I mean, it's not like we went through an entire elite dungeon... And then bug abused it to a point where we were skipping the entire dungeon to get to the final boss, like certain groups of people were doing for the last year and a half or so on the other.
Now you can
dungeons.
Do that legally after
you can.
25
kills.
25 kills.
hilarious. In any case, they also made some changes to the Chaos Roar melee ability this week, including that the ability now requires a target to be cast and needs to hit in order to apply the buff, meaning it's no longer an effective switch for non-melee players. Oops.
Non-what players?
Fine, non-melee.
Oh.
Yes. It also deals a small chunk of damage between 20 and 130% ability damage. Tooltips have been updated, and it will work for all hits in an AoE or twin hit abilities. In the example for this is the Hurricane ability, which doubles its damage against all targets, which when you think about how much damage you can pull off of a hurricane, this is pretty big. It remains for channeling that only the first hit will be doubled. Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw a wild post about this one, like a video demonstrating someone using it with the Karasi sword special attack.
Oh, God.
Which, that's a hell of a throwback, and just absolutely obliterating in AoE with it.
And the Karasi's attack was magic, so this would have been before patch note then. Okay.
No, this was after. This was after.
Isn't that a magic-based special attack, I think?
It's a melee weapon, so I guess maybe it counts. But whatever it is, it seems to be working.
Okay, very interesting. Very interesting. And, you know, with this, they made it very clear that this wasn't supposed to be the be-all and end-all to fix the melee combat style. There's going to need to be...
A what?
It's not the be-all and end-all to fix the melee combat style, and there will be other things that need to be done along the way as well. So, this was an interesting one. Fixed an issue that allowed players who died to be pulled into Phase 7 while they were in the Zamorakian Undercity as their teammates transitioned into Infernus. I saw some people complaining about this, but since I have not done Phase 7, I'm not entirely sure how this would happen. All I know is that it seemed to be relatively rare. And then, there was also an issue where if you died during the encounter, the reward chest would not spawn, and you would not get your reward at the end of it.
A bit of hardcore Iron Man light,
hey? Yes, that's a funny way of looking at it, isn't it? I mean,
die. Sorry.
I mean, not if you miss out on a codex or something, but you know.
You'd never know.
They also fixed a crash on Intel GPU devices when entering the boss dungeon. I believe this is what the issue that Thaxi was having last week, having to set draw distance down to minimum on the Intel GPU. So that's good that's been fixed. There was also an issue fixed where the haste effect from one of the runes would not correctly reduce the cooldown of the disruption shield spell. And for anybody who knows, you can actually use disruption shield combined with resonance to completely mitigate the damage on one of Zamorak's special attacks, at least on normal mode.
Ooh. And get healed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that how you stayed alive so long?
No. I did other things to stay alive for so long. But then burnt bones will now work with the bone crusher. If you have that, if you bring that into the dungeon, you have it on your tool belt, like most people do.
Most but people, you do yes.
Not, I do not. I'm not most people.
Yep, you're certainly something.
Yeah. And then we're just going to move on.
I can't believe this. I still, no. Still can't believe
you caught what
don't
I was going to do
that.
There.
Yes. This is not my first rodeo. We're moving along before I roast you more.
Anyways, did you want to say
I wanted to say a lot, but out of respect for the listeners and their time, I will refrain.
Okay, fair enough.
But when they're missing out on so much good content.
Oh, they are. They want to hear me roast Shane, they could always come to our Tuesday night PC gaming events.
Nice plug.
Which you can find more information about on our Discord.
rsbmb.com/Discord. But the point is that I'm just not a fan of Slayer, and I never accrued the points to put the Bone Crusher on the tool belt.
Yeah, because you canceled tasks you didn't want to do, and then you just did the same task over and over, and then you complain about how Slayer is repetitive and boring, and there's no variety.
What's a task streak?
I can actually check that for you. It's actually fairly high. but
oh boy,
like I have my favorite task.
He doesn't even have the max level Slayer helm.
No, I don't.
My God.
Let's see. Oh, that's not that. But effectively, it comes down to a point of
no,
me.
No, you have a number.
No, it comes down to a point of me just not liking Slayer.
Shane, you are logged into the game. What's the number?
242.
What?
200,
how?
242.
Minus 578.
My current task is 68 steel dragons.
Oh, you didn't cancel that one?
No, I didn't.
Huh.
Finally breaking the habit.
Anyways, I'm just not a fan.
Slayer is repetitive.
I have my favorite tasks, like Lost Grove creatures, dinosaurs, the other dinosaur flowery things, Chaos Giants.
No wonder
giants.
You hate Slayer. You're going to the worst island.
Oh. All right, back onto patch notes. Moving on into some general patch notes, the amount of Herblore XP gained from protein shakes has been adjusted, and the description of all the Dine Arrows have been updated to reflect their functionality, and those tooltips were already huge walls of text, so good luck on trying to find the difference between all that. But I will say, and we did say this last week, that the Dine Arrows are wonderful in the new dungeon. So there's that.
Ooh.
All right. I believe with that we can start talking about the aftermath of Aftermath, or Aftermath's Aftermath, as I was calling it. And I have some questions for you guys about the general lore ramifications of what we ran into in the dungeon. And I think the first one that a lot of people were wondering is that, did we actually think we'd be successful, restore the edicts, and push the gods out?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's one of the...
Did you not?
Well, I did, but it's one of the questions that came up. People were wondering if they'd actually go all that way and actually push the gods out at the end of the storyline.
I was thinking, on a meta level, if there was going to be a twist, I'm not sure there'd be room for it in an elite dungeon. Maybe in a quest, not in an elite dungeon playing out from start to finish with Zamorak as boss.
Okay. I'm trying to remember my quest, but has Jagex done like a huge twist like that at the end of the quest? Like a
regicide?
Okay, that's a good one. I go back to Azanadra's quest as well. With the Temple Knights. That was a bit of a twist, wasn't it?
Plague's End, Dark Lord of Seren all along.
Yeah. But I don't think any of them would be as big as if they said, oh, we're not actually going to restore the edicts. But
really? Regicide was pretty big, dude.
But that wasn't on...
Fighting for the wrong side this whole time.
I know, but that's not at this cosmic scale that we've been operating at.
That still hasn't got over a plot twist from about 15 years ago. It's okay.
I want to ask the next question then, because I honestly thought that you guys might have thought there was a twist incoming on that.
No.
There were a few people I saw, but mostly the opinion from my general perception seemed to be, yeah, this is happening, this is what we are barreling towards, full throttle, and most of the beliefs otherwise seem to be founded in some kind of cope. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Because when you think about it, we spent all that time with the characters and whatnot, and you might as well... you might get attached to those characters, and that's a 100% valid thing to do, I feel. So... Mm-hmm. So,
definitely being people who are a little upset. Or maybe not even a little upset.
Yeah, I've seen
maybe
that
a lot
on
upset.
Media. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have in from numerous people in numerous corners of the community. I'll say so. We wind up after we successfully restore the edicts. We learn that Adrastea has been appointed the the Basilisa of the Kingdoms by Zamorak. By Saradomin, sorry.
Whoa!
That kind of slipped out there.
Double agent!
Why would they use this term?
Because Saradomin is based heavily in Greek culture.
Okay.
And that's the feminine, like,
oh, it's a feminine
king in Greek.
Okay.
They used the masculine form for Saradomin himself in Twilight of the Gods. Yeah.
Okay. And I must admit to the listeners, my ancient Greek is not up to par as to where it is from both of our co-hosts.
Learn
today.
The lore.
I'm okay. Sorry, if you want to take part in RuneScape lore, you have to have had at least an entire course on ancient Greek. I'm sorry, but you're not quite
Latin,
with the rest of us.
And I knew what that meant. Like,
I also took Latin, so damn, I've actually kind of proven my own point.
I mean, you don't have to take a course to know that they're based heavily in Greek and to look up a word that you don't know, Shane.
Okay. Okay, fair. Fair. Now, when we first saw Adrastea appear, we obviously knew she'd be having a major role. We first saw her in Extinction. And one of the things I think that leads on nicely from Extinction and into this is that we started to see in Saradomin a full character arc come into play. Him coming full circle in that maybe he's been humbled by the recent events and actually now sees the need for the gods to step away. I don't think that was said outright anywhere, but that's the sense that I got. Do you guys agree with that?
I feel like it was said outright at some point, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's also interesting that I think Saradomin's arc has been as much a reaction to the player base as it has been an in-game thing, because watching the player's opinion of Saradomin over time, it's gone from outright hate, why would you ever follow this guy, to reluctant respect.
Mm-hmm. To adoration.
What about the people that felt the exact same way about Zamorak when his character arc started in December?
I mean, so the difference there is nothing Zamorak has done has changed his character.
Yeah, and
everything he's done, I'm like, yep, all right, understandable.
Right. And the interesting part about that is that we didn't really have that fully fleshed out when we started back in 2013 with the World of End, now, did we?
No.
His character, I think, really didn't come in. It started to come into being with Dishonor Among Thieves, and more so with the Elder God Wars stuff. But back at World Event 1, I think there was still the very simple idea in much of the player base, and this falls to Jagex for not putting it out there first, is that Saradomin good, Zamorak bad. And I think that's why Saradomin won World Event 1, and we went on the path that we did with him. And I think if we would have had that lore from Dishonor Among Thieves, which I realize we're putting a huge weight on the devs for trying to flesh out a character at the beginning of what was going to be this huge character arc where the players could have choices and whatnot. But I feel like there would have been an entirely different outcome to World Event 1 if the Zamorak of today went up against the Saradomin that we knew back then.
I think the change would certainly be the Saradomin of today.
Yeah.
Because again,
the change is Saradomin
Zamorak's
of today.
Character has not...
It hasn't changed.
Changed.
But I'm saying if we would have known
any
more...
any point ever.
I'm saying if we would have known more about Zamorak back in the day, that might have tilted the outcome.
And then Saradomin gets tumbled right from the start.
There you go.
I want to say on the note of Zamorak that I've seen a lot from Mod Jack in the Discord saying that a lot of the downfall of the previous approach, like the Dishonor Among Thieves approach, is that every god essentially has to be someone you can side with.
Right.
Because there was the whole emissary system in place and whatnot and player choice. Yeah. But now Zamorak can just be a villain, and villains are allowed to do things, big things. Big things that might make some of the player base side against him, but that's okay because we can do that now.
And some things that parts of the player base would like.
Hmm.
Because you got to bet there were some American patriots last week hearing Zamorak say liberty or death who wanted to be on his side in that dungeon.
Oh, do you think they launched that on a specific day for a reason?
We talked about that for about a minute and a half last week, and we said, you know, it's a nice touch, but probably not.
Oh, I would have.
Okay.
Mudjack with all the draft titles, Independence Day. Liberty or death.
That would have been funny if that could have been it. Eh?
And they didn't go with that. Why?
Tragically, Mod Ramen didn't like him. So all the American hate patriots, you know who to send the hate mail to.
So who can suck my Star Spangled?
Oh, God.
I have to send the image.
Oh, God. In any case, back to this Zamorak rabbit hole, and then on to Sarah Doman's final message. He said, "People of Gelenor, the threat of Zamorak has been averted, but at a great price. To keep you safe from the Lord of Chaos, I must leave this world and battle him eternally in the plains beyond. My daughter, Adrastea of Hallow, serves as Basilisa with my blessing. Show her the..." Ah! He just pasted it. I was trying to read. "Show her the unswerving loyalty you have shown me, and our kingdoms will continue to prosper in unity." And for anybody watching the video version of this on YouTube, you will see that there was just an image pasted in the show notes. So
that's an image.
Why didn't we have you on? Why didn't we have you on the show last week? It was July 4th and all.
I don't know. Only you talk to me every day or something.
Right. Anyways. So, following from that, Sarah Doman, of course, disappears. Anything else you guys want to talk about on the Sarah Doman side?
Can I talk about something that happened before the Sarah Doman stuff came up?
Yeah.
So there was no fanfare whatsoever for the World Guardian losing their powers. It just
happened.
You wouldn't have known it had happened if not for a dialogue line saying, "Nope, my powers are gone."
We also said it's quieter.
Hmm.
Which, of course, is referring to the voices in our head.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. There they go. There's a lot of people missing them, to be honest.
Yeah, they were an interesting character. And once again, we of course, dealt with the whole Sliske thing in our last installment at the end of Twilight of the Gods. So I don't feel a need to go back on that. But
yeah, I don't think they should have been a thing forever, but they're a fun thing while they lasted.
Yeah, and I wonder if anybody's actually mourning the World Guardian status out of this, because that's a pretty big deal too. That's 9 years of character identity.
People joking, how are we going to do Raction now?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I had something else the other day I ran into that I don't remember what it was I was doing.
Okay.
There's still a few references that, like, oh, I can do this. I'm the World Guardian.
Yeah.
Was it something archaeology based, maybe? Like one of the mysteries, maybe, or something?
I want to say it was.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe one of the relics?
Yeah, it could. Could be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, being able to offer relics to the monolith in the first place.
Yeah, that. Mm.
I don't remember what it was.
Right, because wasn't there the little bit of shadow anima inside us that was supposed to protect us from interacting with the Codex? So.
And now we're just, well, we're meant to be fueled by the Codex, basically. Yeah. A little shadow battery.
Yeah, now we're kind of sterile, aren't we? So.
Yeah, we got sterilized by Gothics.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, right, that has another meaning. Oops.
A little bit.
All right. Following from this, we talked to, you can talk to Armadil. Armadil is going to return to Tardied, as he promised he was going to do, to look after the elves and whatnot. But he wishes that, as for this world, he could have spent more time in the wilderness, near where he lived with Obasuth. So that was
Obi-Wan?
A nice, no, Obasuth, his former husband. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, so the Pride event only about a month gone at this point, and yeah, now we get to see Armadale's side of it, and damn,
and
still sad.
Bury your gaze and all of that. Yay, trope.
Well, we didn't technically bury this one as much as burn him to death. You know, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, God. I remember that reference.
Love me some fried chicken.
I remember that reference from our, I think it was the Stormguard episode. We talked about potentially having Kentucky Fried Aviancy.
With that recipe Sarap gave us.
God.
I don't remember that recipe.
You put it in your notes.
The recipe
you wrote
for
the
God
whole damn thing down.
In Twilight of the Gods.
Oh, right.
Frying him up.
Right. I remember now. Thank you. Armadil also said that whenever he returns to Gelenor, of course, more of what he loved is always taken away, and it makes him even question the god's motives at that. So this is another god who is saying that, well, maybe our influence isn't necessarily the best thing for the world. And I actually have a quote from his dialogue on this where he says, "What about this world is such worth or is worth such a high price? Is the soil more fertile? Are the summers warmer and the winters less harsh? Is poverty impossible here? No. It's always about one thing, power. There is power here, and we gods are drawn to it like moths to a flame. And what have we done since we arrived? We have warred with one another. We have squabbled, squandered, burned entire kingdoms to ash, all for a taste of that power. But what is the point of power if it cannot protect what really matters? I have stolen it from the creators of the universe itself, yet still my Obi is gone and I cannot bring him back. I'm sorry. For what little it is worth, I am sorry for what we gods have done to this world, to the people here, and to the land itself. You are right to banish us."
So, yeah, second to Gothics, Armadil is our most anti-god god.
And this also kind of goes into what we started the whole Six Age with, is that there was the idea with the invention skill and divination that the godless faction would take a place in the stories going forward. And that never really happened in an official way. But now the godless's biggest activists to get what they want are actually Ceridoman and Armadil. You guys,
isn't that a turn up for the books?
Right? I thought that was interesting.
Gods are working with us against gods. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And willingly pushing for the godless side, which at the beginning was only a 1 out of 8 faction, which really I think speaks to maybe the direction this thing should have gone through the entire arc. But after this, I want to talk about what Azanadra had to say, representing the Zerosians. But before I do that, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because you guys let us do so many fun and interesting things, like monthly bits about boss tier list, about legacy combat, about designing a comp cape rework and what the comp cape rework might have looked like today. So I'd like to thank in particular this week Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Bryflex, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Hello Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Lucky Ducky, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Patty the Architect, Ricky A., Pernasius, Samuel FL, Skioten, Seth W., Stubbeve, Tabby, The Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zat. Thank you, everybody. It truly means the world to us, letting us do all these fun extra things for the podcast. It wouldn't, of course, be the same without all you guys. But, of course, if this sounds at all interesting to you, just check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. There you can support the podcast, starting for as little as a dollar a month. You'll get a mention in the show notes and access to that entire back catalog of monthly bits that I was just talking about, things like the boss tier list, the legacy special, daily scape tier list at the start of the year, just to name another one, the whole back catalog of 48 monthly bits and counting. We also do have a VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll receive a special VIP rank on the Discord, including chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And sometime in the next month or so, we also have another Patreon special coming your way, where a couple weeks ago I floored Thaxi and Earth with my bank, and we're actually going to go through that bank in an orderly manner. And
I will not be sober for this.
Boy, you couldn't be sober for this.
So this will be, and I have insisted that it be delivered entirely uncensored. So.
What was the biggest transgression on the bank, in your opinion?
God. It's probably that you still have your Pharaoh's armor from 15 years ago.
Okay.
Not for sentimental reasons, because you had a couple things in there that I called you out on and were like, no, Mike made this for me or something. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll respect that.
Yeah.
What did you say it was?
What?
You said it was something.
Oh, I said if it took you that long to remember, it can't have been that bad.
No, there are just so many to pick from.
I mean, I'm going to let you roast Shane's bank and be quiet about my own.
No, it's not that it's disorganized. It's that everything he did was on purpose.
Oh, I see.
Like
interesting life choices.
Have you ever seen Tommy Wiseau's The Room?
Oh, God. I am aware of it and its intense cultural footprint.
So the best description I've ever heard of that is that it's someone who made art, but on a shot-for-shot basis, made the wrong choice every single time.
All right.
But all of them, someone sat down and said, I'm going to make this choice. I want to do this. This is what I want.
So this is going to be a whistle-stop tour of Shane's life choices, why he does what he does.
Yes. It's not, it's not disorganized.
Just for clarification, I have an entire tab dedicated to the Ark, and apparently that's a transgression.
I had a tab that used to be a Slayer tab until I sold everything in it, and now it's just two anchovy pizzas.
That's really funny.
Anyways, Patreon supporters can look forward to that. Yeah, you two are going to
have fun.
It'll
be good.
That.
I promise to be entertaining.
All right. So after you talk to Azanadra, after you talk to Armadil, you can talk to Azanadra who you find in Caradat with Nex and other Zerosians. And it's actually both Azinadra and Nex who are going to return to Frenisque, because Nex has enough power to be forced out by the edicts as well. And I think the things that pop up with Azinadra in particular is that we're greeted with the words that the true Zerosians stand for order and for civilization, and of course we'll battle the leftover minions in the wilderness, and they'll be a threat to Zerosian values, and so on and so forth. Azinadra assigns Trindine to work with Adrastea to do what must be done, what Adrastea can't or won't do.
I have ideas about this one. So, from what we've seen of the upcoming quest, Daughter of Chaos, there is a shady agent in the background of Adrastea's scenes. And there's some theories about that being Trindine. Like, apparently,
oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Wait, what is this?
Yeah. So, the upcoming quest, Daughter of Chaos, there's a strong theory that Trindine is going to be the Adrastea's agent in that quest in disguise. And apparently Modzura, in his little preview for the quest, said that he had a lot of fun writing the dialogue for that agent. And, yep, checks out with Trindine being Trindine, you know?
Yeah.
I got a hunch.
Yeah, and, you know, this is going to be another one of those fresh break story points, and we'll have to wait and see what they do with this. And I find it very interesting that we're effectively going to have the same character imprints, Ceridomen on Adrastea and Azinadra on Trindine, but of course they're going to be free to make their own decisions and carry out the tasks how they see it in their own mind, which of course gives the writers of upcoming quests a new blank canvas to work on. So I think that's the area where we have the most potential for growth in the upcoming storyline.
I like the ongoing use of the Zerosian and Ceridomenist factions in comparison and contrast with each other. That's been happening ever since Azinadra's quest, really. We have the order-based factions, and the fact that some of the most loyal, ostensibly Ceridomenists, the Temple Knights, can be flicked over to Zaros with a simple reveal and a bit of a tooting of a horn. And not much difference, but some crucial differences on the underside of it, really relating to how scrupulous they are.
Yeah, and do you think there's anybody else who can be turned like that?
Not sure, but maybe. Well, probably not Adrastea.
I think
the goal sounds like working under Adrastea's nose to roughly work for the same principles, but ensure that the Zerosianism is present underneath it all.
Mm-hmm. From the shadows, as always.
As always.
And that's what I think the Zerosian side of the player base has probably wanted since the very beginning, when his first rumblings appeared, right? That kind
present,
of influence, yeah,
but shadowy.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be interesting to watch. Before departing, Azinadra says, have faith in this one precept. Zaros will return. The way must be prepared for him. So they're keeping that door open to do another, you know, high concept storyline involving the monolith and Erebus and all that.
I mean, would Azzy believe anything else?
Also, yes, but.
But the door is open.
The door is open.
And you're entirely right. Azinadra, from the very beginning, has been loyal in that view. It's just his implementation has been different. In that. Oh, is that what you'd call it? Okay.
Would you not?
I mean, I wouldn't use that word for it, no. But if you want to.
I do, in fact, want to.
Okay. Okay.
That's rude.
Also, they say that if Azanadra and Nex are able to, they'll search for Char, who also disappeared into the monolith at our Battle of the Monolith event last year. That's another character that went missing. Yeah.
Feels like she's still low on the list of priorities.
Yeah.
As far as Azzy goes, for sure.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm going to say this. I really didn't like Char's quests. I thought they were, sure, they're interesting from a lore perspective, but eh. So.
Not one for puzzles, Shane.
No, it's not that. It's just the implementation of the flame stuff was kind of annoying. But
yeah, well.
And then we have this quote from Trindine. Later, Dad. Toodles.
That's a hell of a way to drop a bit of a lore point, hey. Extremely trending.
Yeah, that's just that's just hilarious, I think. I just wanted to point that out. anything else on the Zerosian side? I feel like this one was very clearly clear-cut, and we imagined this as the way it was going to go for them.
There is, for what it's worth, Wahizatel's task is pushing humanity out of this dark age, essentially.
Oh, God, what could that mean?
Pushing them out of the Dark Age, weren't you listening?
Well, yeah, but the Dark Age to me is different than the Dark Age to you.
I mean,
what's the Dark Age to Zaros? Zaros is dark, right?
Exactly.
Pushing them out of the Sixth Age.
And that's where I want to go next. Adrastea says that she anticipates civil war. Obviously between the Zamorakians. In the wilderness, which is pointing to our next collection of updates. And
not really a civil war, though. Between the Zamorakians?
Mm-hmm. Or... different factions.
Yeah, the different factions.
That's been in the previews for the Daughter of Chaos quest. So it roughly seems to be the Avernic versus Bilrak and Moya and the Demonheim lot, and the Black Knights, apparently, according to the lore book from the dungeon.
Oh, Lord Aquarius.
Oh, yeah.
My homie.
Yeah, and I brought this subject up with a bunch of other people, you know, illustrating civil war in Gilenor, specifically between the Zamorakians, of course. And the feeling of that was kind of like, okay, I don't necessarily know if we need to do this, but
bravely forward we shall charge.
Yeah, that, and I mean, it's definitely, I guess, going to be a way to rally around the wilderness revamp.
Oh, is that happening?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't watch the behind the scenes for the next 3 months, did you?
No, I did not.
We're getting a wilderness revamp in August with the quest.
Oh, good.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Being hunted down by demons in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And this leads to the big question that I've been asking and I think has been batting around in our heads since Extinction and Twilight of the Gods. Is this the end of the Sixth Age?
There are multiple answers to this from different perspectives. Yeah. Because on one hand, the Sixth Age is just a marketing concept.
Yeah, and it was also very short when you think of it in-universe-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's the old Rodo's Ages lore book that came out with one of the Yak tracks that's saying, hey, maybe in the future they'll decide to define the ages in a completely different way from completely different events that actually make more of a difference time-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. But marketing-wise, as far as the Sixth Age goes, as 2013 releasing the HTML client RS3, hey guys, gods are back big time, that's over.
Yeah. And then you ask the question, but Sixth Age meant that the edicts are down and the gods can venture freely. At least that's, I remember that being the definition of it. And that's not the case anymore. So that really raises the question, is the sixth age over? In that narrow perspective, yes. Yeah, you're right. It becomes a point of semantics.
In that, even the phrasing in the mini quest, though, I think Adrastea says pretty much word for word, it feels like the end of an age.
Right, I forgot to include that. She did say that. And that's.
And I think ages are always defined by huge events.
Yeah.
Not by years, but huge events. Years have nothing to do with it. It could be 10,000 years or 1,000. They vary in length, no?
Yeah, they do.
They're always separated by huge events.
Yeah.
So a huge event, the gods return after a long-ass time. And then they're banished. And then it goes to something else. I see an argument for a seventh age, but it's just a marketing thing.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, like if we're talking,
put a number on it. Like yeah. It doesn't matter.
Like if we're talking Gilanor history, in the wide scope, maybe this like 9 years more or less, 2013 to 2022. Maybe that's just a single event, that one weird little bit where the gods were around for a bit.
Yeah, and with that. You go into what you're saying about that Yak Track lore book, how they might reconsider how that's interpreted. What was it? Reldo's Book of Ages?
17th edition.
Okay, 17th edition.
Yep.
And I think when we look at this and we go back, and let's just, for the purposes of the rest of the segment, let's just call the Sixth Age 2013 to 2022 for the purposes of this segment. Obviously, what comes of that is going to be different in-game lore-wise. I'm going to ask a big question right now. Would you guys have rathered we just continued on and not do this back in 2013, now that you know what the big arcs were? Would you rather that World Wakes, just imagine the World Wakes never happen and we continue on as our merry way of not being World Guardian and not
keep on
running into all these crises?
I don't think the game would have survived this long.
Damn, really? That. You think the Sixth Age was that crucial?
I think it brought a lot of people back. Brought a lot of people into it. I couldn't say it was life or death, but it certainly revitalized it.
Yeah, and when you talk about revitalization... I mean,
that's basically just saying... Because so much of the past 9 years has been linked to this, whether directly or indirectly. Yeah. It's also like saying, hey, what if we just didn't have any updates in the past 9 years?
Right.
What if we didn't do EOC? Without offering,
offering their big questions.
Look at the
like
old
that,
school. Look at the old school updates for the last 9 years then. Imagine those instead.
I think it could have survived. I think like Ritual of the Majrat here being our biggest scale of quest or lore event, I think that's sustainable, and it is what we're trying to go back to now. I do think though that having the gods around as big strong characters has been a major thing in getting people invested.
There's a
lot of memes and the like you see on Reddit that about the clear, strong personalities of the gods, and there's so much fun being had with that. But it's well and truly possible to have those characters without them being gods, and that's what they're going for now. We have Adrastea, we have Moya. Maybe they're not too well defined yet, but that's something we can work on.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like I said, gives the writing team a lot of latitude for interpreting these characters. And, you know, if we're going to be if we're going to answer this question in that true form, you have to ask, would Prif have happened without a Saren influence in the Sixth Age?
I mean, I think it's kind of a silly question. Overall.
Yeah, but the question I started with is, would you have preferred to just keep it simple all along and not involve the gods, or are you glad that we did? I'm going to put the both of you on the spot now for an answer on that.
I think it does involve an inherent letdown, having the gods and then ripping them away. Maybe I would have preferred it, honestly.
I don't know. I liked it.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm not feeling it as a letdown, but I see how it is.
Yeah, I'm certainly not feeling let down.
No, I'm not feeling let down either. And the only reason I ask this question is because I'm interested to know what the game's trajectory would have been had we not gone down this god path. Because what I said after Extinction, and what I've definitely said after Twilight, was that I felt a great relief personally. As a player, in that we weren't on this 9-year long track, so to speak, anymore, and that we're going to be attaching and attacking these things in a much more concise manner, hopefully.
We've been liberated.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Liberty or death.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else about winding out the Sixth Age, or if that's happening, or Aftermath in particular?
Not really.
All right.
I do have something to comment about where we're going next, in that we do seem to be focusing on the kingdoms. There was some commentary from Sarah Doman that Adrastea is his choice for Basilissa. Mm-hmm. Because the kingdoms are disunited, having like nominating someone from Asgardia would alienate the other kingdoms, and so more of that inter-kingdom politics, more of finding out an identity for Mithilin, Asgardia, Kandarin.
And wasn't there also
several new characters mentioned?
And wasn't there also a discussion that Adrastea was chosen because didn't she have some, I don't remember what it was, but didn't she have some experience back on Hallow of doing something similar?
Not so much experience as much as being trained in statecraft from the sound of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's where it gets interesting then.
Fair enough. So mostly book smart and not really tested, but now is the time. Thrown in the deep end.
All right, fair enough. Yay. Fair enough. All right. We do have one more update to discuss this week, and this is something that really shook the community, and I don't think it had to, and this is the new Ultra Rare Treasure Hunter promos. I'm going to be 100% honest. I'm going into this, and I honestly don't think these are too big of an issue. I know there are people who think otherwise, but we'll start off. We have the Superior Knowledge Bombs in the Ultra Rare Prize Pack. Can grant double XP for an hour. Can't be used during double XP or boosted prayer XP at a Gilded Altar, Chaos Altar, Auto Sanctifier, or Powder Burials. Etc. I don't think this is the one that people are overly concerned about, because we've been saying for a long time there's going to be a way to get your own burst of double XP. So then we come to the Protean and Dummy Processors. These will process 2,000 proteins or 75 dummies at once. Now, I'm going to run through some numbers for some of the Protean skills. Not all of them. I'm just going to pick and choose a few that jump out to me. So I'm going to start with construction, assuming mahogany planks. You run through 2,000 mahogany planks. That's 280,000 construction XP, assuming you're using it at that level. For fletching, if you're at Level 95, that's 776K, 610,000 at level 85. For crafting, at level 99, 646,000, or at 92, halfway point, 605,000 for a stack of 2,000 Protean hides. And then for smithing, because those ones go every 10 levels based on the type of bar that you're using, it just goes to whatever your highest is level-wise. So at level 90, Elder Rune, that would be 1,060,000 XP. And if you were at level 70, going through 2,000 Protean bars in one action would be 660,000 smithing XP. Now, where the numbers get really high and really absurd in terms of just finding it absolutely amazing that you could get this much XP in one action. Everybody sitting down? Level 92 agility, going through 75 agility dummies. 1,050,000 XP. This is an approximation to us because we didn't have anybody who was level 92 agility to confirm the XP on this. At 99, that goes up to 1.4 million. For Slayer, at 92 and 99 respectively, it's 1.689 and 2.3 million respectively. For Hunter, it's 1.9 and 2.8 thereabouts. And for Thieving, it's 2.4 and 3.4 million XP, rounding up there on that. If you go through that step.
You get 5 of these.
Yeah. So, in theory, you could go through upwards of 15 million thieving XP if you had huge stacks of any of these dummies on this.
And if someone's getting ultra-rare prizes, then chances are they've done a lot of treasure hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the key point and why I don't see this as that big of an issue. These things have a 0.001% drop chance from a chest. Now, to figure out about how many chests you'd need to open to have a chance at getting an ultra rare prize from Treasure Hunter, you do something called a binomial distribution, and you can approximate that with some simple math. And what that works out to be is that you'd have a 4.9% chance of getting one ultra rare treasure hunter chest after opening 5,000 chests. So these are stupid rare. And what this does is it kind of paints a picture of what's happening with this. Do you guys have any initial thoughts before I jump into some of the analysis on this?
Oh, bravely go ahead.
Okie dokie, okie dokie. So, I think the first thing that's happening with this is that Jagex is trying to reduce the number of Proteans in the economy, because remember recently you could get Protean boxes.
In the economy?
Well, I mean, not necessarily in the economy, in players' banks, let's just say. In players' banks.
So they give them a 5% chance after opening 5,000 boxes.
To get one, yeah.
I don't think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think in the long run, it might help people who happen to have a massive build-up clear up a bit, but in the process, you're going to get a lot more. It doesn't feel like that's where the balancing is going.
No.
I feel like we get far less Proteans now than we did previously.
Can't you literally buy them from the oddments store?
Yeah, but that's capped per day at, I think, 25 medium boxes?
Don't those have 100 each in them?
That's a good question. I should check that. I'm not entirely sure what the number is on that. But I was talking with Zerdones.
They have 150 in them.
Okay. Okay. And I'll check the
you
number.
You can buy 20 a day?
I think so. I'll double
so
check
that's
that.
3,000.
And then, obviously, with that, you'd be able to slice through a bunch of those with your various processors and such, right? So
that's correct.
I was talking with Zerdones, who's been on the podcast before, from the lore angle, about what this might be, and I wanted to share his opinion on this with him. And he asks the question, and this is perhaps charging bravely ahead, Earth. He says, is it necessarily bad to give players a way to skip the skilling grinds? And he doesn't think so, because if PVMers and the whales who are injecting money into Jagex are bypassing skilling, he says that's fewer, it's going to be fewer skilling resources in the economy because fewer are being produced, but there's still going to be demand for them because of how they're used in combat or PVM, which he feels creates an opportunity for people who are okay with that skilling grind.
That sort of assumes that
not endgame.
Yeah, there's a lot of skilling stuff that is still just skilling for the sake of skilling, not skilling for the sake of endgame.
Yeah, and you're probably going to bring up something like Star Trek Online so you can buy to the end. First, you have to get a character to max level first.
Yeah,
but
that's
levels
true.
Don't matter in Star Trek Online.
No, and it happens
or in most other MMOs.
Yeah,
and a lot of them you have to get the max. You have to max out once in order to even buy the thing.
Yeah, and so, I got the numbers here on the Protean packs, by the way. You can buy 60 small Protean packs every day, and each one of those has 75 in there. So you can buy up to 4,500 Proteans a day. If you wanted to.
Still a fair chunk.
Yeah. So that's just under two processors. Or no, that's, yeah. Is it 25? Yeah. It's just over two processors worth. So
I want to say RuneScape is maybe now effectively giving people the choice.
Yeah.
To skip to endgame if they want to. Like, right. There are a lot of people who do play the game for nice casual skilling, and that can be something they hold for themselves internally.
They're
just
idle clicker.
Enjoying.
Yeah, like yep. Tanis's smithing on mobile.
Mm-hmm. But I think the idea of high scores for that is kind of dead now. The top of the high scores is set, has been for years, and is not changing.
The only time it changes is going to be when a new skill comes out.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a treasure hunter moratorium on that anyway.
Yeah.
And so where it matters, it's already fine.
Yeah, and what Zerdones feels on this is he says he hopes it would enable Jagex to focus on endgame content. And one of the bigger problems he feels affecting RS is attracting new players or recovering lapsed ones. And with that, early to mid-game content is going to be, and if you look at the game, generally outdated, and a lot of it is a decade plus old. So if someone is a new player, comes in, or somebody who took a long break and wants to get into content they see advertised, like maybe Zamorak, which we talked about, its story mode still being relatively accessible, but there's still gear that you're going to need. He feels that Jagex, or sorry, the player would have a significant problem of having a long grind ahead of them, and most of that being really boring because either the content isn't up to modern standards, or there's not much socialization to keep the player engaged, because most players are hovering around endgame.
It doesn't make sense based on the rarity of this.
And I feel like it's an interesting line to walk, because endgame is different for each and every player. You can have an endgame where you're chasing comp. You can have an endgame where you're chasing 120 all. You can have an endgame where you're chasing 200 mils. You can master quest, PVM, and so on and so forth.
You can have an endgame where you exclusively play Trouble Brewing.
I'm sure you know some people that do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so that also doesn't make sense if it's to skip. If it's to get new players into the game to skip the skilling grind, because As you said, after 5,000, you have what, a 4-something% chance of getting
4.9% chance of getting one.
If you buy those 5,000 keys with bonds, that is $2,666 US.
I'm also not sure this meshes with the idea of maybe they're trying to shuffle proteins out, like lower the amount in the economy, because that is going in the opposite direction of making XP easy to come by.
Yeah, that also doesn't make sense because I feel bad spending 1,000 on the first computer upgrade, major upgrade in over a decade. I'm not going to spend $2,700 on pixels for a new game that I'm not invested in. So that argument is bullshit, too.
Yeah. Maybe it's just better for RuneScape to sell max level accounts.
Well, and see if we're at that point. Thank you for bravely charging ahead into that. I think there's people in Jagex, specifically on the business side, who'd be interested in trying that.
Well, no shit. If it brings in money, they're going to be interested.
Right. And the question is, what kind of blowback would you get what kind of blowback would you get from the RS3 player base if you did that? And that leads to something else I've been thinking. I will never know the answer to this. How much money are they bringing in this weekend with this promo? How many people are crazy enough to be chasing these?
Oh, God.
Like, I don't see the appeal. Tanis, I messaged Tanis earlier. He doesn't see the appeal. He feels that if they wanted to raise a lot of money with this, they would have put another rare item behind it, like the Green Santa hat.
I don't get their target market here.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to figure out, is who is chasing this?
People with 50 billion proteins?
But even then, you're going to get more.
Yeah.
I think it's a terrible decision to add to the game, but I also don't get what the benefit is. Taking proteins out of the economy is bullshit. They're not even tradable, so that's...
Out of the skilling economy, I guess.
Well, it's not even the skilling economy.
You can buy
it's
them.
Just, what if it was just more of a... Take the proteins.
And I mean, you're gonna use them to get XP. They don't give any other benefit or products.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, take the proteins out of players' banks. The only thing that makes sense about that is that this is a precursor to direct purchase lamps.
Don't we already have those?
Yeah, but that's also capped on the Oddments store.
And what, pray tell, is that cap?
I think it's like 25.
25?
Yeah.
And that's...
A day.
What size?
Medium. So.
The 25.
I honestly don't get this promo. I obviously get why they're doing it. They want to make money, right? But what I don't get is I don't get who's gonna chase for it.
I mean, in general, there's also the introduction of ultra rare prizes from the get-go, which is also what this was packaged with.
You said 25, right?
Yeah.
And level 92, that's 360.
30. Oh.
It's 30, not 25.
At level 92, that's 437 XP. So you can get that per day from lamps.
Like that, and like that's not an insignificant amount, but it's not huge.
Yeah, so I don't get why you're saying it. There's a cap on it. It's not really an argument.
All I'm saying is I don't think this is going to be a problem for the game. That's where I stand on it.
I don't understand why it was added. They're not taking a stand in either direction. there and people are getting them.
They're either testing the water for more stupidly rare promos, or they're trying to clean the Protean items out.
Again, to what end?
I don't think they'd be trying to clear them out when they've just introduced the Protean shakes.
Yeah, you keep going back to that, but that argument doesn't make any sense.
Right, but you can't get the Protean shakes yet in the boxes. What I'm wondering, is, are Proteans going to be phased out, and are we just going to go to more of an XP based model where you had XP on Treasure Hunter or direct purchase from
a lamp?
Yeah, just amp the lamps
that you can already get.
No, but amp the lamps. Ooh, that's a fun way of saying it. Amp the lamps. Amp the lamps up.
Ben gets distracted by his own wording.
Are you facepalming right now?
Yes. Because you're not making any sense whatsoever.
I'm not making sense to myself. I'm trying to figure out why this is here, aside from making more money.
Maybe this just is baffling.
It doesn't make sense to me. I've laid the points out. I've laid Zerdone's points out. I don't think it's an issue, but it doesn't make sense to me why it's here. Because I can't think of people who are going to chase for this. If you know anybody out there who's going to chase for this, anyone listening, please do let us know. So,
reach out. Ask why.
Yeah. I don't know.
They're okay.
I'm happy to move on from this. I was hoping to get to a question of what Jagex wants the RSN game to me, but I don't even think that question matters anymore, since we haven't been able to provide an answer of what these things are for.
I mean, it makes sense to move RS away from a grind game to an end game. Game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But
something that you have a 5% chance of getting after spending $2,700 is not...
That's not the way to do it.
So, I don't think that's their goal.
Now, here's an interesting idea. How much would they have to charge outright? And please don't hate me for this, listeners. How much would they have to charge outright to give somebody a lamp that gives them 13 million XP? I don't want that to happen. I'm just asking the question. How much of a dollar value they'd have to put on that?
In comparison, their pride?
With the 2,700 that we're talking for, just a bunch of proteins, then the standard
you
set
get
is pretty high.
So let's not undersell this. This is
no.
In Hunter 2.7 mil times 5.
Those are for the
so
dummies.
That is a 90. That'll get you to 99 twice from level 92. So. And they're all about the same.
Yeah.
So.
Well, perhaps that's the answer then. Stonk up on dummies at 92 and cut half the amount of time it takes to level a skill to 99. Maybe that's the answer out of all this then.
Well, we've always got you, Shane, so.
What does that mean?
Calling you a dummy.
All right. And on that note, we're going to move on to our picks of the week. But before that, I have something to show off that Zant.
Oh God.
It's good. Ooh. It's good. Zant wanted me to show this off this week on the show. It's a preview. It should be live by the time you guys all see this. Some of our Patreon supporters are going to be very aware of this, and this process started in October of last year. We knew we were going to be coming close to the $200 Patreon reward, and we said, okay, let's do a postcard, a commemorative postcard for RSBNB Update about what our listeners mean to us. And we commissioned Zant to do this. And in addition to the postcard, he built an entire scene in Unreal Engine 5. And as a result of this, it was the Legends Guild. And the idea behind it is that the legends of RSBNB Update are our supporters. And this postcard went out to Patreon supporters last month. And with that, they also got a special version of the video that you can see on Zant's art station, which is linked in the show notes at update.show. And everything that you see here, I think with the exception of the foliage, was modeled by Zant himself. It's a wonderful piece of artwork, even all the way down to the water fountain. That was one of my favorite aspects that was shown off. There's also a number of Easter eggs as well that the very open-eyed looking at his art station we'll see. But Zant wanted me to show
this off. I consulted on a number of those, by the way.
I know you did. So. I told him to talk to you about some of that stuff. But he's going to be taking this to a wider public release, and figured that, you know, since we initially started this project off on the podcast, we could show it off here. And just go to his art station and have a look. There's some nice video composition effects of what we wound up going with. And when it comes down to it at the end of the day, it's just such a rich environment. And one of the things I've always enjoyed seeing in RS was how RS might look if an artist took a specific area in RS and rendered it in a modern game engine. And that's precisely what Zant did, just created this area from the very beginning. It's the Legends Guild made in Unreal Engine 5. And just go to his art station that's linked in the show notes and enjoy this and take it in. It is truly something else. And we just have to say a big, huge thank you to Zant for doing this. He really enjoyed working on this project, and it was something that was very difficult to keep secret, to the point where I almost broke the secret a number of times myself in talking.
That doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, I almost broke it a number of times myself in talking at the through our Patreon segments and such. But the link is in the show notes at update.show. Alrighty then. Which of you guys have picks of the week?
Hello.
I guess I can.
All right. Ooh. Who's going first?
Not I.
All right, go for it.
I guess that's me then. All right, so I currently play Dungeons & Dragons with a bunch of people. I'm DMing a campaign at the moment, and I find that what really helps me bring anything alive is just having at least some level of basic map. Sometimes this has led to me just drawing some rectangles in Roll20 and calling it a day, but recently I have found something so much better than that. It is called Dungeon Scroll. It's a pretty cool dungeon drawing tool that will make grid-based maps for you for whatever your heart desires. There's all sorts of handy drawing tools on there. It's so much better than, for instance, using the same stairs asset multiple times that I was having to do earlier. Now you can taper your stairs to your heart's desire. Stuff like that. It's a bit niche, but if you've had the last minute drawing map experience, then this is absolutely something I find valuable. There's even a maze generator if you want to go all Sliskay's Endgame on your
really?
Players. Yep.
That's terrifying.
So, yeah. You can even toggle the size. Extra large? Don't mind if I do.
Oh, God.
So yeah,
I've always wondered how the DMs do this. If there's some kind of some kind of tool, or maybe a stencil set for Photoshop and the like, or.
Mm-hmm. I have known a few people who make their own maps. I know someone who just grabs whatever they can off Google Images right. last minute. Mm-hmm. But yeah, here's something nice and standardized and already set to a grid system from the off. So do what you can. Make your imagination go wild and torment some innocent players.
And the interesting part about this is that it seems to run entirely in the browser.
Yes, and it's entirely free, which is also pretty rare for stuff like this, tools yeah. like this. It's supported entirely by the creator's Patreon,
good.
Which is pretty cool.
Good, yeah. Yeah, there is a big Patreon link, so that's always good. Mm-hmm. So. Wonderful. I happen to know a good number of people that play D&D who might find this useful if they already don't have tools. So, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, Earth.
So, my pick of the week is Skyrim Together. It recently came out with a full release. As you might be able to figure out from the name, it allows you to play Skyrim with your friends.
Oh.
I have dragged Shane into this with a couple of my other friends.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. It is buggy as hell, and it's exactly what you want from a Bethesda game. And when I say it is terrible, I do mean Skyrim. Skyrim Together is phenomenal because it takes the buggy mess that is Skyrim, and you can have multiple people doing it together.
The communal nightmare.
It's incredible. I don't know how they did it. So, no longer do you have to go through all of the dumb stuff that you normally do in a Bethesda game alone. You can do it with friends.
I have a question, Earth. Can you still mod it to hell and back so that you can have
Unfortunately, yes, you can.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So you can not only experience Skyrim together, you can experience the hell that is overly
the horny
modded.
Modding community. What? Yes, that's correct. I wanted to sneak some of those mods into the mod pack that we sent Shane just to mess with them, but I got overruled on that one. Because my friends are no fun and lame.
You mean Adam was no fun.
Alan joined in too. Like
oh,
I
really?
Said, I got outvoted.
Okay. I will send them some thank you cards.
Yes, you do owe them a big thanks because I could send you page one of Nexus mods for Skyrim, and it would scar you for life.
Oh, God.
So, all right.
Let's just say that people have taken the mod tools and
they've expressed done, their creativity.
They've really done some quite literally incredible things.
All right.
Oh boy.
Where Jesus is not present.
And on that note, we're going to move on to your achievements. Starting off, we have Breezy with 99 fishing on July 13th. Skips got 99 mining and cooking also on the 13th. And then we have Serge Aurora with 99 archaeology on the 12th.
Alright, we have Barizi with 99 Herblore on July the 11th. We have Durado, 99 Magic, also that same day. We have the interestingly named Iron Ass, 99 Runecrafting and Dungeoneering on July the 9th. And River Design also getting that 99 Dungeoneering on the same day.
Well done.
And then, on July 8th, Lady Claw got 120 woodcutting. Swaboosh got 99 archaeology. Tiny Cat got 120 defense. And then on the 7th, Remo Reaper got 120 farming.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. All right, what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Questscaping.
So, I haven't been playing too much RuneScape as of late, but something I did do lately was enter a costume competition that's being run with the Fashionscapers Discord.
Oh, really?
RuneScape itself, yeah. So it's an official one. They're handing out one of those KBD off-brand Lego sets as the top prize. Yep. Yeah, so that's just closed, I'm afraid, but I had quite some fun designing a Zamorakian outfit. What I ended up doing was incorporating the evening mask and just doing, like, going through my outfits, seeing what the most messed up face I could find was. I ended up using the Bloodveld mask, hiding it behind. Yep. Oh, yeah, that was great fun.
Wonderful. Glad to hear. Not the Abyssal Demon one?
Oh, no, that's Zerosian. That's Zerosian.
Okay. I mean, demon. Why not?
A rebel Abyssal Demon. Thing.
Okay. All right.
Green Outlawed.
Just working on maxing. I'll probably get 99 thieving next.
Oh, good. You doing safes?
Yeah. So.
Nice.
Quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How many skills you got left to go?
Well, let's count, shall we?
All right. Time for a counting lesson.
I'm doing it quietly now out of spite.
And for the record here, the one who sometimes has counting troubles is me. Interesting story on that is that when I go
11.
Okay, 11. 11. When I go out to a restaurant, I will most often forget to count myself and the number of people that we need for the table.
You don't exist.
Well, you're not a person, Shane. You're a robot.
All right.
You keep forgetting that.
And you remind me every day.
Mm-hmm.
You can always count on him for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Putting you in your place.
Yeah, and maybe
trash.
And maybe that's the reason I wanted you here this week.
So I could yell at you about your capitalist bootlicking.
Well, no, I honestly had no idea what was going on with that, so I figured we'd have a discussion about it.
Oh, okay, now you're going to act clueless because you've been called out. Okay.
No, I honestly still don't think it's a problem. I just don't. I know what the point of it is, aside from an attempt to make some money, which we'll see if it's successful. So,
I said capitalist bootlicking.
Like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Here we go.
Hey, I want Jagex to make money. It's as simple as that. Because if they can make money, that means we have a game. That's the way I see it.
The short-term gains.
In any case, as for me, I'm currently still working my way through Yak Track. I am behind on this one, believe it or not, folks.
Tier are you at?
I am on task 34.
Me too.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's weird.
I thought I was going to be more behind than you were on this one, but I feel like my gameplay over the past number of weeks has either just been dailies or a bit of PVM that didn't really register in terms of the total amount of actions taken necessarily to progress the skill and kills that fast. So for about the last 5 tasks, I've actually been playing through the first task and just doing what it recommends I do.
Why are you copying me? This is literally what I've been doing.
Okay. If I was copying you directly, you'd be at the rune span right now.
That's where I'm headed next.
Oh, well, I just got there.
I'm on a farming run right now. So
perhaps we should end the show since we're both on the same path then.
Well, you're still licking capitalist boots, so You know, we are not quite in sync like that.
Okay, fair enough.
Boots are a part of a healthy diet.
But, yeah, I want to get Yak Track done, so that's going to be my main goal going forward. But aside from that, I haven't really had time to go into Free Death Week too much. But in any case, with that, I'll say that if you want full show notes, again, update.show. If you want to subscribe to us on any podcast listening service out there like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Casts, and more, just visit update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB, where you can find the nibbles from this episode and, of course, the Zamorak episode last week. And oddly, the nibble that took off the most so far out of all the ones we've done since last week was the one about the ring enchantments, believe it or not, which I found surprising. But, hey, people apparently like the ring enchantments, so that's a good sign.
I like their bling, Shane.
Yeah, yeah, and they really make the rings from the Rex Matriarchs interesting, more interesting than they were aside from Reavers. So check those nibbles out at youtube.com/RSBNB. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. And until then, take care, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Goodbye.
So, yeah.